Radio Catskill.
Live from the Radio Catskill studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Catskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, President Trump's proposed Medicaid cuts could strip coverage from 1.5 million New Yorkers and hit rural counties hardest. Senator Chuck Schumer brought that message right here to Garnet Health's Sullivan County campus yesterday, and Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar was there. We'll bring you her report. This weekend marks 56 years since Woodstock, and in a rare twist, the dates line up exactly with 1969. Radio Catskill takes you to Bethel Woods, where Woodstock alumni are back on the grounds, but this time they're glamping instead of camping in the mud. Plus, Dan Hoos from Sullivan County Government is here, and a sneak peek at the latest episode of Curtain Call, our theater podcast, today at the Center for Discovery's Integrated Arts Department. First, the news.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Kristen Wright. President Trump and Russian President Vladimir Putin will sit down today at a U.S. Army base in Anchorage, Alaska, to discuss how to end Russia's war in Ukraine. Trump told reporters on Air Force One that Russia will face economically severe consequences if Putin doesn't seem interested in peace.
Economically severe, yes, it will be very severe. I'm not doing this for my health, okay? I don't need it. I'd like to focus on our country, but I'm doing this to save a lot of lives. Yeah, very severe.
Rick Meistrom was mayor of Anchorage in the 1990s, a time when he says warm relations flourished between Alaska and their Russian neighbors. But Meistrom says his good feelings about the people of Russia don't extend to Putin.
If I were mayor, I think I would have a hard time to give him a warm welcome to Anchorage. I would be polite, but probably cold.
Protesters supporting Ukraine have demonstrated along the streets of Anchorage ahead of today's summit. Israel's far-right finance minister says construction work is going ahead on a highly controversial proposed settlement project in the occupied West Bank, a project that he says is intended to, quote, bury the idea of a Palestinian state. NPR's Emily Feng reports.
The proposed settlement of about 3,400 housing units would be on a patch of land dubbed E1 near Jerusalem. It would slice into the West Bank, dividing in two the main territory that Palestinians hope might one day be their Palestinian state. Bezalel Smotrich, the finance minister pushing the long-delayed E1 project forward, said at a press conference Thursday that it is precisely his goal to, quote, ensure that by September, the hypocritical leaders in Europe will have nothing to recognize, referring to a flurry of several Western governments saying they will recognize a Palestinian state this fall. Jordan, Egypt, and the Palestinian Authority all condemned the E1 project. E1 and other Jewish settlements in the West Bank are illegal under international law, but their construction has accelerated over the past 2 years. Emily Fang, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
Stocks opened mixed this morning as the Commerce Department reported an uptick in retail spending last month. NPR's Scott Horsley reports.
Retail sales grew by 0.5% between June and July, with increased auto sales accounting for much of the gain. Auto sales rose 1.7%. Spending at gas stations was also up, even though gasoline prices were down. People spent more money at grocery stores in July, but less money eating out. Import prices rose 0.4% last month, suggesting foreign suppliers are not absorbing much of the cost of President Trump's tariffs. Export prices edged up 0.1%. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway has bought a stake in United Health Group. The news sent beaten-down stock in the health insurance company higher. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
This is NPR. A new analysis by the Boston Federal Reserve says high earners in the U.S. have propped up consumer spending. Looking at credit card data going back to 2015, spending has increased among those making more than $120,000 per year, much faster than low and middle income earners over the last 3 years. At the same time, credit card debt is rising among low and middle earners. A new report says 2024 was the hottest year on record. NPR's Lauren Sommer says the high temperatures contributed to extreme weather in the U.S. and elsewhere.
2024 was hot, partly because of the natural climate pattern of El Nino, which raises temperatures. It was also hot because emissions from burning fossil fuels hit record levels. That's according to a new report from the American Meteorological Society. As a result, glaciers melted, producing the greatest average ice loss in the last 50 years. That contributes to raising sea levels, which hit the highest level in modern record keeping. Extreme rainfall also hit record levels because a hotter atmosphere can hold more water vapor. Because El Niño has now faded, scientists aren't expecting 2025 to take over as the hottest year, but it's still likely to be in the top three. Lauren Sommer, NPR News.
Federal health officials are reviving a panel to look at the safety of childhood vaccines. The Department of Health and Human Services says it'll look to refine and develop vaccines that it says would have less serious adverse reactions than what is currently offered. It's the latest action from the agency regarding vaccines. I'm Kristen Wright, and you're listening to NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Melville Charitable Trust, committed to ensuring all people have a safe, stable, and affordable home that allows them to thrive. Information about ways to prevent and solve homelessness is at MelvilleTrust.org.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. New York State Senator Chuck Schumer visited Sullivan County yesterday to announce a new bill aimed at reversing President Trump's Medicaid cuts. Schumer stood side by side with local lawmakers, Assemblymember Paula Kaye and Sullivan County Legislature Chair Nadia Reich, Garnet Health CEO Jonathan Schiller, and other community leaders. Lawmakers estimate that 1.5 million New Yorkers could lose health care coverage if the law is enacted. But for rural areas like Sullivan County, where there are fewer hospitals and a larger percentage of residents on Medicaid compared to urban areas, the cuts could be a make-or-break moment. Radio Catskill's Kimberly Izar brings us this report from Harris.
Standing at the entrance of the Garnet Health Medical Center Catskills Harris campus, New York State Senator Chuck Schumer said enough is enough. At a press conference on Thursday in Sullivan County, Schumer announced new legislation that would reverse President Trump's Medicaid cuts and extend health care tax credits.
The fallout is just starting here in the Hudson Valley, and it paints a dark picture. Longer wait times, higher health care costs, reduced medical services, layoffs, or even closures, which our rural hospitals are especially vulnerable to.
He urged that Trump's Big Beautiful Bill takes money out of the pockets of Hudson Valley residents and into the pockets of the ultra-wealthy.
Why are they cutting these things? Only one reason. They want to give tax breaks to billionaires. I have nothing against billionaires. You know, they made their money. God bless them. But they don't need a tax break when a mother with cancer might not be able to get the treatment that her child needs.
Schumer's new legislation is called the Protecting Healthcare and Lowering Costs Act. It proposes to repeal all healthcare cuts outlined in Trump's Big Beautiful Bill and permanently extend the Affordable Care Act's premium tax credits that are set to expire at the end of December. The entire Democratic caucus has signed on to co-sponsor the legislation. About 150,000 people could lose health care, and 7,000 workers could lose their jobs in the Catskills and the Hudson Valley regions alone as a result of the cuts, says Schumer. Jerry Dunleavy, CEO of Garnet Health Medical Center Catskills, says he's hopeful that the proposed legislation could provide Sullivan County with much-needed relief.
Oh, it affect us tremendously. So if you think about it, about 30 to 35% of our patients are on Medicaid. The 19th congressional district alone is estimated to have 37,500 patients that are going to lose their coverage. That's not all Sullivan County. That's in the district. And if we can get this groundswell of community support, perhaps we could reverse all or part of these cuts.
More than half of the state's 50 rural hospitals were already at risk of closing even before Trump's tax cut and spending bill passed, according to data from the healthcare quality and payment reform. Garnet Health's Catskill Harris campus was considered one of the hospitals on that list at immediate risk of closing due to loss of patient services and declining revenues. Earlier this summer, Garnet Health laid off 42 employees and scaled back its outpatient diabetes and pulmonary rehab services to manage financial constraints. Dr. Pamela Murphy is the chief medical officer at Garnet Health. She said that cuts to Medicaid would mean patients would be forced to make difficult decisions.
The bottom line is these Medicaid cuts will impact us tremendously. just think about when your coverage is reduced, your enrollment is lost. It is either because you lose eligibility or you face new work requirements that you can't do. You have a gap in enrollment. These often lead to really hard choices. Am I going to put food on the table or am I going to get my prescription filled? Am I going to go to my follow-up appointment? Can I seek a checkup appointment? Can I get lab work or testing that the doctor recommends me to get? Am I not going to fill that prescription because you know what? It's too much for me this month. I'm going to buy something else for my child. I'm going to put food on the table. My child needs a new pair of shoes. Something that takes away because we can't afford it. Some won't schedule follow-up visits after they've been in our hospital. We need follow-up care. We need continued care. We need preventative health.
Sullivan County Legislature Chair Nadia Raj says she'll do everything she can to keep the doors of the county's few hospitals left open.
Sullivan County has over 28,000 people on Medicaid, more than one-third of the population, one in every three people. Can you imagine if even some of them lost Medicaid, what would happen to them? It's appalling. I'm appalled and saddened as to what is happening down with our administration in Washington, D.C. I'm really grateful to the senator for being there and advocating for us. The impacts of losing Medicaid and of not providing Medicaid to our residents in need will have devastating effects that we've just heard. This will impact their health care, the health care facilities, emergency services, to which many of them are struggling now. Our county does not have the resources to provide for this lapse of service. Our residents deserve better, and we are grateful, Senator, for your voice and your support. And I, along with my Democratic legislators, will do everything we can to support Garnett in their stability and being open.
Senator Schumer says he plans to introduce the bill as soon as Democrats return to legislative session following Labor Day. He urged the public to contact the Republican lawmakers to support his bill. In Harris, I'm Kimberly Izar for Radio Catskill.
And it's Friday. Dan Hoost from Sullivan County Government joins us, as he does every Friday. And he was at that press conference yesterday as well. Good morning, Dan.
Hello. How are you?
Good. And so the senator outdoors there with a few of the legislators from Sullivan County Government as well, making the case to, you know, get some relief for this law that's going into effect.
Yes. You heard just now from our chair, Nadia Raj. Also, our Health and Human Services Committee Chair Kat Scott was there. She didn't speak, but she was there in support. Our County Manager Josh Potosik was also there and briefly spoke about it. And while this can be framed as a partisan political issue, as far as Sullivan County is concerned, it is a bipartisan issue that we need to make sure that our local healthcare facilities don't diminish any further than they already have. I think most everyone will say that we used to have more than we have now. The county has had to step in to provide more emergency response ambulance service as well. And that's not a hit against the our volunteer corps. They do the best job that they can do. But there are real concerns in rural locales like Sullivan County that our healthcare facilities may not only diminish further, could disappear altogether. And Garnett isn't saying that at this point, but I know they had plans for a new facility in Sullivan County. And at this point, I think that's just sort of they're in a holding pattern with that, trying to see what might happen down the road because they stand to lose a lot of revenue and potentially a lot of patients as well who without Medicaid can't afford even to go to the hospital. Let's not forget our emergency room and urgent care that Garnett operates often operates as a primary care facility. A lot of people may not realize that. And it's not ideal. It's not what Garnett or the county would want, but that's how it works because people can't afford to go see a primary care physician. On top of that, we have, I think, a third of our population, a little bit over, that is on Medicaid in one way or another. What happens to them after this bill gets enacted and the impacts start to come? You know, there are folks I've heard who say, oh, it'll just all sort of shake out in the wash kind of thing. It's not going to. There are going to be real harsh impacts on people that have no other alternative. And how do we care for them? And the big thing that I'm not so sure county taxpayers realize is they're going to end up shouldering the cost for this because the county is mandated to provide services whether Medicaid pays for them or not, which means if Medicaid doesn't pay for them, local taxpayers will have to pay for them rather than it being spread out nationally.
Well, and Sullivan County Manager Josh Potosik said in a statement, these cuts are not saving anyone money. They simply shift more costs to states and counties. What this means is that taxpayers will pay significantly more to provide services, which counties like Sullivan are mandated to offer. That's a quote from a statement from the Sullivan County Manager Josh Potosik.
Yeah, there's no getting away from that. And as the federal government shifts costs to the state, the states will shift costs to other municipalities. And in New York State, New York is well known for shifting costs to counties. We always call it unfunded mandates. In this case, the state may have no choice but to shift some of those costs to it. So we're working with state and federal officials as much as we can. That's why Schumer was there. We're working with Garnet officials and our other healthcare folks locally. But there may be impacts that we cannot avoid.
And the county hasn't learned yet what the state's reaction will be yet to these federal level cuts.
No, we're still waiting on that. So we're already looking at a tax increase probably above the tax cap for 2026. But that's not yet able to take into account everything that may be coming down the pike from these Medicaid cuts.
Garnet Health is also a major healthcare provider, but also a major employer as well in the area.
Yes, over 600 people they employ locally. So if they were to lose if people were to lose those jobs, it would be a significant hit to our local economy.
District 5 Legislator Kat Scott, chair of the legislator's Health and Human Services Committee, said in a statement, quote, in short, these cuts would create a healthcare crisis in Sullivan County.
They would.
Let's talk about some other things that are going on at the legislative level in Monticello. Work on the homeless shelter continues. What is the latest there looking for housing for folks?
Well, the homeless shelter work continues behind the scenes. There isn't anything really to discuss about the shelter per se, but the housing situation where we have to do emergency housing, those costs are escalating rapidly. For just 2024, our final emergency housing cost was nearly $3.5 million. This was something that our Health and Human Services Commissioner John Little reported to the legislature yesterday. Emergency housing costs are only covered 29% by the state. 71% is covered by the county. And if we can work with clients to find cheaper housing, even in emergency situations, that's going to benefit local taxpayers as well. So we, of course, are continuing to work towards maybe getting that $8 million grant for the Gateway Housing Center, or aka the homeless shelter. But first, the legislature has to agree on a location for that. That hasn't happened yet. We do have a lot of people that John pointed out during the legislature that we're working with to find housing other than hotels for people in need of emergency housing. Everyone from Catholic Charities and Monticello Housing Authority to the Woodburn Housing Authority, Access Supports for Living, Fearless. It was a larger list than I expected, and it was very heartwarming to see that we have, it looks like over a dozen, I think about 15 different organizations that are working as hard as they can to get people into more stable housing situations, not only temporarily, but on a permanent basis as well, because it seems that there's just a growing consensus that emergency shelter in hotels is the last resort. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be what it has been for a long time, which is the first choice.
Also, a final solid waste management plan was approved in committee. What's next for that plan? And remind folks a little bit more about that plan.
This is a solid waste management plan that is required by the state. The Department of Environmental Conservation sets forth operating requirements when municipalities like ours operate a solid waste system, which we do. We have the transfer stations, and then we truck the waste out up to Seneca Meadows landfill upstate. We have to have a plan in place for how we're going to operate and maintain those six transfer stations, also actually a cardboard recycling facility, an exportation building. We, of course, still have to maintain the landfill, even though it's closed and capped. It still needs to be monitored and maintained. We're also looking to establish a composting facility, which is part of this solid waste management plan. So the state has said, we're good with what you have. You've made all the changes that we want. Now You just need to formally adopt it. I believe that will be good for the next 10 years. We can update it as we go along. So the legislature, I anticipate, will adopt it next week. Now, there have been some people worried that this includes the incinerator plant in it. It's mentioned just a little bit in there, but it does not set out any kind of plan for that. We are going to be starting a separate RFP process for that, probably in another month or two, for the waste-to-energy plant. That will have its own process to go through. And this, the adoption of this local solid waste management plan will only be minimally affected whether it's approved or not approved, this solid or this waste-to-energy plant. So in many ways, it's a separate thing. The DEC is not holding us to a certain path of action with the waste-to-energy plant through this solid waste management plan. Like I said, that will be separate.
So if it's mentioned in this solid waste management plan and expect to get approved by the full legislature next week, does it mean the legislature is approving
No.
an incinerator?
No. It means they're approving the concept for further research, and that's what's going to happen separately. The solid waste management plan we have to do anyway. And it just, I believe the, from what I remember seeing in the waste or in the solid waste management plan, it was mentioned as a, as an idea, as something the county was considering, but we are not obligated in any way to do anything further with that. The DEC just wants to know what are we looking at with solid waste? Because it is an issue that if that landfill upstate closes, what are we going to do? And at this point, the solid waste management plan basically spells out that we will just have to export further away.
If you're just joining us, we're talking to Dan Hoost, Sullivan County Government Communications Director, and joins us every Friday with an update from Monticello. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about the shape of the county's finances and more. It's Radio Chatskill.
On this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, comedian Lewis Black explains how he conjures up his trademark rage.
I wake up and either I'm looking at a newspaper, or I'm turning the TV on, or I'm looking at my phone. And within 5 minutes, I'm livid.
I'm Peter Sagal. To feel something else, tune in to hear new games, old friends, and an interview with the founder of Atlas Obscura. Join us for the Calming News Quiz from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and joined in the studio live by Mr. Dan Hoost, Communications Director for Sullivan County Government, who joins us every Friday with an update from the legislature. We were talking earlier about the impact of those federal Medicaid cuts and how the county has not heard yet from the state about how that might be absorbed and potentially passed on. However, the county treasurer had a report yesterday from an independent auditor stating that the county's finances are in pretty good shape, just waiting to find out about these upcoming challenges, I guess.
Yes, that's the real question mark. Yeah, the county's independent auditor, Matt Montalbo from Drescher and Malecki, that's an upstate audit certified public accountant firm, I believe, and he comes every year. And this year he came and talked about gave a report about the independent audit that he had conducted. And it's truly independent. We are required by law to do that. So even though he was introduced by County Treasurer Nancy Buck, there was no kind of collusion or anything with that. They came and looked at our numbers, and he is very blunt about things. And he was yesterday. And he said, you know, we're still trending with more revenue than expenses right now as of through 2024, because we haven't finished through 2025, yeah, but that revenues, and he said this is the case around New York State, revenues are not outpacing expenses. Expenses are outpacing revenues. So there's going to be a point where that's going to flip. He said Sullivan County right now is better off than a lot of other upstate counties where they've already done that flip, where their expenses are higher than their revenue. But he said that basically what I'd call a sales tax revenue boom that we've had over the past few years has put the county in good stead. We've had more revenue coming in and more from, by the way, non-property tax sources like sales tax and things. That's been higher than our property taxes. That he said the county is in a relatively stable position to weather what's going to be coming down the road. So even though I've been talking before about tax increases possibly exceeding the tax cap coming, we may be looking more at like single-digit tax, property tax increases rather than some other upstate counties that are considering double digit property tax increases. So it was a hopeful and a good report that we got. It shows that the county not only has been getting more revenue than it's been spending, but also that we've been very conscientious with taxpayers' money, where we understand our taxpayers are paying a lot and they should get something for that, and also that they should trust that their county officials are doing their utmost to try to rein in costs and not spend all over the place.
County Treasurer Buck also gave a list of the top 20 sales tax generators this year versus last. Anything that you can
This is fascinating.
About?
I'm going to be putting this up on the website and on social media later today. But a lot of people say tourism is our top tax generator. It is not. It actually hasn't been for a little while. In 2024, it was, and 2025, building materials and supplies were what generated the most sales tax, followed by department stores, which are not like what you and I remember as department stores. We're just talking about retail outlets. Followed by car sales, automobile dealers, followed by gas stations, and rounding out the top five, restaurants and other eating places. Traveler accommodation, which is what you typically call tourism, came in at number six. So it's not insignificant, but it's actually, that was, traveler accommodation was in the $85 million range, whereas building materials and supplies was in the $350 million range. Wow. So there is a huge difference there.
So there's a lot of building going on.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it's good for some local small businesses as well, in retail and restaurant.
Absolutely. And that building, a lot of it is year-round, or people who are coming up on weekends and finding they want to stay longer. We all know this. It's the old story in Sullivan County, but it's really been accelerating. We are a popular place for people to be, to live and to work and to play. And I think that is going to continue and will help mitigate some of these cost issues that we're looking at down the road that may affect our taxes.
Build more restaurants. Okay, it's a couple of hearings coming up next week. One of them canceled, though. There was a public hearing scheduled to talk about cannabis, but a couple others still happening.
Yeah, the sheriff discussed it with the legislature and said he's fine with the state police having that authority. The sheriff's deputies have enough on their plate to do that. The county doesn't need to have the authority to go in and inspect the cannabis stores. He feels the state police are doing a good
job
with that.
This was a hearing to
discuss. That was what this law was going to do. And so they said, okay, fine. If you're telling us you're busy and you want to focus on patrol and jail and the other things that you have to focus on, the state doesn't have to worry about the county jail. The state police don't even have to worry about the state prisons per se. They're engaged in the patrol. So they said, yeah, that's fine. But the other public hearings, which are coming next week, I believe starting at 10 a.m., will be on extending the law that allows 12 and 13-year-olds with proper supervision and training to hunt in Sullivan County, just something that the legislature feels.
Which had been a pilot program.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And they want to continue that. And then also Sudi Sullivan's budget, the county contributes towards that.
And that's why the county has to have a hearing.
Yes, and that's why there's a public hearing. The total budget request for Sudi Sullivan from 2025 to 2026 will be $15.5 million. So people are welcome to weigh in on that. The budget, I believe, is available on the college's website. And if you have questions or want more information, you can either contact them or our legislature office, and we can get you the details on that so that you can know what you're talking about.
And speaking of youth, there is a whole youth bureau within the county government. Talk to folks about that and what's going on in terms of some grant applications that are now available.
Yes, this is a great thing that people should definitely take advantage of. If you're like a school or a municipality or a nonprofit, an individual who works with these nonprofits, we have grant money available, several hundred thousand dollars worth that we dole out every year. Part of it's the county, part of it's the state, but it all runs through the county's youth bureau, which counterintuitively as part of our Office for the Aging, but it is all under our Division of Community Resources, run by a great lady named Kathy Pacey, and she is eager to hear from anyone who is interested in applying for any amount of money from the Youth Bureau to help fund a youth program in 2026. Now is the time to do it. The deadline is the end of this month, I believe, for applying, and she would love to talk to you more about it. There are application materials right online, sullivanny.gov. You look up the Youth Bureau, you'll find it right there. We don't want to be hanging on to any of this money. We want to give it all out. So don't think that you don't have a chance. You probably have a very good chance as long as you meet our requirements.
Well, some of those opportunities include initiatives that focus on civic engagement, community involvement, physical and emotional health, family support services, youth sports education opportunities there, youth team sports. There's a wide range of things that are available.
And even if whatever you have doesn't fall under any of those categories, give Kathy a call, because she'd be interested in talking to you about it and maybe working with you to see how we could get you not only this pot of money, but there might be some other money out there. Her number is 845-807-0394. That's 807-0394. Give her a call. She would love to talk to you.
A presentation tomorrow at the D&H Canal. It is the Port Jervis to Phillipsport section of the canal. What's this about tomorrow?
Yeah, Cliff Robinson, who is a local D&H Delaware and Hudson Canal expert, is going to talk about the canal, how it wended its way from Orange County into Sullivan County at our D&H Canal Interpretive Center in Linear Park, which is right off Route 209 in Summitville. This is going to be at 2 p.m. tomorrow. He is going to be showing photos, illustrations. This ran for almost 100 years. It was America's first million-dollar enterprise, and it reshaped the entire county, especially this area where you're going. In fact, you're going to Summitville, which is so named because it was the highest point on the canal. It's the summit. To the south, the water ran towards the Delaware River. To the north, it ran towards the Hudson River, a.k.a. the Delaware and Hudson Canal. Really cool place. You can go visit the locks right next door to the Interpretive Center. The museum is air-conditioned. It has a little gift shop as well. It's run by the county. A really cool place to be, even if you can't make it tomorrow at 2, but that will be a free event.
And a reminder, there's a free rabies vaccination clinic coming up on Tuesday.
Yep. August 19th, 6 to 7:30 p.m. at the Neversink Firehouse. It's right on Route 55 in Neversink. This is being done by our public health department because there was a rabid fox that was found in that area a couple weeks ago, and they want to make sure that anyone who has a dog, a cat, or a ferret knows that they can come and get their rabies vaccination for free. No pre-registration. You just have to be a Sullivan County resident.
And I need to let you go because you have a picnic to get to.
I do, actually. I'm going to be going to take some pictures of our kids. I think there were about 30, maybe 40 of them total that participated in our Summer Youth Employment Program this year, which was run through our Center for Workforce Development. A lot of people know it as the Sullivan Career Center. And they were all over the place this year. In fact, I'm going to learn all the different things that they were doing. But I think they did things indoors and outdoors. It's not like an internship where you're getting college credit and learning something specific. You may be out gardening one day, and the next time you may be in like a radio station studio or something, learning how that all works. These are teenagers, not college age. These are younger folks who aren't yet out of high school, who are handled by crew leaders who are only maybe a little bit older than them, but provide some adult supervision and yet some ways to relate to the younger generation. It's a wonderful program we offer, and we're just going to celebrate them and all the work they've done this summer with a picnic.
It's that time of year. Our teenage interns for the summer, their last day was yesterday. So
yeah, and we're getting back towards the school year starting. Can't believe it. Sorry.
Not that I have to go to school, but it's getting closer to those words fall.
Yep.
All right. Dan Hoost, Sullivan County Government Communications Director. Thank you again for joining us. We'll see you next week.
You have a wonderful weekend.
You too. 56 years to the day since Woodstock's opening countercultural chords rang out in Bethel. That's today. We're back on the grounds, and the vibe is still peace, love, and a lot more comfortable. We'll find out more after a break. It's Radio Chatskill.
Support comes from Sullivan Allies Leading Together, committed to ensuring the safety of our community. Protect those most important by keeping medications in a secure space. Be a part of the solution. More at saltcares.com.
Silicon Valley was once considered a liberal force, but its reactionary roots run deep.
A quasi-authoritarian politics has been there all along. The idea that technology can bring us into the future by restoring an older social order through these charismatic, powerful men.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
Saturday afternoon at 4 on Radio Catskill.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Today marks the 56th anniversary of Woodstock's opening day, and the dates line up perfectly. 56 years ago today, on Friday, August 15th, 1969, the Woodstock Music and Art Fair kicked off on Max Yasker's farm in Bethel, New York. That weekend, more than 400,000 people came together for 3 days of music, peace, and muddy memories. In a rare twist of the calendar, this year's anniversary weekend falls on the exact same days of the week as the original festival, August 15th through Sunday, August 17th. It's a small but poetic echo of the event that became a defining moment in American counterculture. Radio Catskill, the closest radio station to the original Woodstock site, is marking the occasion all week long with a special local coverage of the anniversary celebrations at Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. This year, Bethel Woods is welcoming several Woodstock alumni back. We've talked to some of them. But unlike 1969, there's no need to rough it on the grounds of the Woodstock Festival at Bethel Woods. The center now features a new glamping campsite just off the main field, offering festival goers cozy tents, beds, and shelter from the elements. Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett, Valerie Mancy, and Donna Fellenberg visited the new campsite, met with returning Woodstock veterans, and explored how that rain-soaked, peace-filled weekend continues to inspire half a century later.
When you ask anyone who attended Woodstock in 1969 about their memories of the festival, it'll make you wish you had been there. They'll tell you about hearing Santana live for the first time, or Jimi Hendrix's iconic rendition of the national anthem, and the rush of being surrounded by 400,000 people all came together for a weekend of peace and music. But walking around the fields at Bethel Woods and hearing about the rain and mud of the weekend might make you think, people camped out in this?
Those tents look a little different.
Yes, they do. I was just saying, we have this picture of somebody who took bales of hay and made a little construction out of it. It was really cute. People got very creative.
As times change, so does the way people come out to celebrate the upcoming Woodstock anniversary. Bethel Woods have debuted an all-new campsite for glamping, a portmanteau of glamorous and camping.
So last year was our first year with the campsite. This year's our second year, and we're really excited because folks don't have to be attending a show in order to stay here. So people can extend their stay in addition to a show night, which is really nice. Then folks can kind of explore the area, check out the Delaware, things like that. It's really cool. It's going to take me a second to get this going.
That was Mackenzie Peck, Communications Director of Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. She told me about the variety of campsites Bethel Woods offers to new and returning visitors.
So you can stay for as little as $80 with the car camping, tent camping. And then if you want the real sort of luxury experience, a kind of VIP concert experience, you're going to spend a couple hundred dollars a night extra. But that means getting these really nice luxury glamping tents where there's a kitchenette, a shower, your own private bathroom, ensuite, multiple bedrooms, and you're literally steps from the concert stage. But then there's also bell tents. So that can be a nice in-between if you want more of a classic camping experience.
As part of our excursion to Bethel Woods ahead of the anniversary celebration, Valerie Mancy, Donna Fellenberg, and I even got to go inside one of the cabins for ourselves.
I wonder if maybe you don't want the AC for sound, but there is AC.
AC, wow. Yeah, so we've got two bedrooms, fully furnished. We're very proud of our bathrooms here. Wow, is that gorgeous? Yeah.
Look at this.
So we've got a full shower in here. I don't know if you call that a full shower. We've got a shower.
Full enough. Full shower.
Full enough for us.
That's right.
Proper toilet and all. So what I think is great is you can bring your own food, your own beverage, settle in, and have a pre-show party, a post-show party.
And you don't have to drive.
Exactly. Can you imagine after the show is over, you just walk right here and you're done while everybody's getting to their cars and whatnot? Like, that sounds
it's
dreamy.
Like being at Woodstock, going from the site back to your tent where everything was wet. So that's not going to be the occasion here.
Even though the glamping campsite was only revealed last year, Mackenzie told us several Woodstock alum have already returned and stayed in the tents. And as the anniversary approaches this weekend, Bethel Woods is preparing for several more guests to arrive and camp in style. Donna, you said you were here at the original Woodstock.
I was. I think we got here on Thursday, actually, but it was still very crowded.
Yeah.
And I saw the gates go down, and I still have my ticket.
What does it feel like? I mean, it's a drier day today than that weekend was, but what does it feel like being here, seeing the glamping and seeing how it's changed?
Well, you know, it doesn't bother me at all because I thought the glamping, that you had put the glamping on the on the site where everybody was sitting, and that kind of bothered me a little bit. This is so remote from there. I think it's fantastic.
What's your best memory from the original Woodstock in 69?
My best memory, I have two best memories. The first one was as soon as I pulled my car in, people converged on the car and said, "Do you need any help?" And I didn't put my tent up. Other people that I've never seen again put my tent up. So I thought that was really nice. And then the whole time I was here, I never went to the site. I just walked around and I met people from all over the place. And it was just amazing. So you asked me, what's it like for me when I come back here? It's heartwarming. And it feels like coming home. It's great.
The music festivals of today owe a great deal to Woodstock, but soaring ticket prices and increasingly mainstream acts are leading to cynicism among young people about their purpose in our culture. Mackenzie and I spoke about how millennials and Gen Z are craving the authenticity of Woodstock and how bringing these camping sites to Bethel Woods can help show the next generation what the weekend was really all about.
It's really about the next generations and creating new meaningful memories with music and camping here and remembering how important 1969 Woodstock was, what a pivotal cultural moment it was, and remembering how important that is. Because I think a lot of those lessons can apply today and should not be forgotten.
So that's it, huh?
That is where it all happened. And we actually, with the lawn mowing, we cut a peace sign in the side of the hill. It's really beautiful. You'll be able to see it in just a sec here. Really lovely. And when we have musical acts come by, they just get so excited and animated about being able to walk on this field and to stand where the stage was. Like the Struts were just here and they were just so thrilled.
In Bethel, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
And you can find all of our Woodstock coverage at our website, wjffradio.org. Go to the shows tab, click on podcasts, and there you'll find the Woodstock Lost and Found podcast, exploring all of the forgotten stories of the Woodstock Festival in Bethel, New York. And a note that Donna Fellenberg, who attended Woodstock, as you heard, will have a special edition of Catskill Character tomorrow at 10:30 on Radio Catskill with Woodstock memories on this anniversary weekend. We'll take a break, and when we come back, the latest episode of Curtain Call with Tom Candela. This is Radio Chatskill.
Federal funding for public media has been eliminated. The funding cuts will hit October 1st, and they will likely hit small rural newsrooms like this one especially hard. This community could lose access to local news, national reporting from NPR, music and cultural programming, and crucial emergency alerts. Please help safeguard this free public service by donating today. Here's how.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Curtain Call is our local theater podcast hosted by Tom Candela, who is here today with a sneak peek of the latest episode, which drops today.
That's right.
I will say, without sounding cliche, it is a very special episode. You visited the Center for Discovery's Integrated Arts Department.
That's correct. Yep, yep. And at the Center for Discovery, individuals with complex and developmental and medical needs are creating some extraordinary performances that celebrate their ability, their expression, and their community. Their recent production of Cats, it happened in the springtime, but brought together students, residents, and staff to deliver a musical experience that was full of heart, talent, and joy. And on this episode, I speak with Connie Loretto. He is the Senior Director of Music Therapy, and he is the leader of the Integrated Arts Department. And we're also going to have a little standout, some performances. We're going to hear from two of the performers in the show, Paul as Mr. Mistopheles and AJ as McCafferty, and they're going to sing their songs for us.
Let's take a listen. It's the latest episode of Curtain Call, sneak peek.
Every spring over at the Michael Ritchie Big Barn at the Center for Discovery here in Sullivan County, they come alive with an extraordinary kind of magic. Young performers with complex developmental and medical needs take the stage not just to act and sing or dance, but to express their unique stories, their strengths, and of course, their spirits. The center's Integrated Arts Department has long harnessed the power of music therapy, also using dance, drama, and a lot more to unlock the vast potential of these people and build confidence. And this fall, the center is launching a new performing arts academy that will take this commitment even further, offering teenagers and young adults an innovative arts-based educational experience designed to foster independence, creativity, and conviction. So today I'm thrilled to welcome Canio Loretto. He is the Senior Director of Music Therapy. Canio, welcome to Curtain Call.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Can you tell us a little bit about what inspired you to launch the Performing Arts Academy that's happening this very fall?
Yeah, so it was about 15 years ago now, a group of our adult residents expressed an interest in performing on stage. So we got a small group of us together and just started researching everything we could find about facilitating theater programs for individuals with special needs. And we found they were often performing alongside their typically developing peers or along the staff members that were taking care of them. And we said, we want to do a little better than that and set a commitment early on that said, we're going to have our individuals performing on stage on their own. So we have now produced 10 productions altogether since that dream. But I think it was almost seamless to take what we had already learned about the arts as transformative experiences and apply them to our performing arts initiative.
Now, I know there's a program there called Healthy Six.
Mm-hmm.
How does that model of care inform the Academy's curriculum?
I think one thing that really makes the center special is the holistic approach that we take when taking care of the individuals with complex conditions. And we really recognize that the folks that we care for, we recognize that there's a lot of stress that they're feeling because of their conditions and because of the world we're living in. So our Healthy Six model is really meant to mitigate that stress. And that includes things like making sure we're eating healthy, that we're engaged in exercise programs, and really part of that is also helping the individuals understand their emotions and the emotions of others.
Yeah.
And then it leads to all the beauty that can come beyond. Before you could sort of discover yourself and discover your abilities as an artist or as a person, you really have to be in touch with who you are emotionally. And the arts can do that for folks.
Okay. How do you work that into the actual like rehearsal process, for instance?
Yeah. I think what we do is really pay attention to what every single person who's interested in performing brings forward. And we're really paying attention to their strengths. So we're looking at, if you're a person that can say one word, that one word becomes incorporated mm-hmm. into our script. If mm-hmm. you're someone who can sing a whole song, that song becomes part of our script. If you can deliver a monologue, that becomes part of the performance. And the show becomes a representation of who our performers are as people and what strengths they possess.
And that sort of leads me to the philosophy of the right to move. Can you explain a little bit about what that is and how that too is integrated within your productions?
Yes, exercise is a very important part of what our whole philosophy is mm-hmm. all about. And so that really becomes the pinnacle of the work that we do. Our warm-ups are really important, getting our bodies prepared. For some of our folks, it's about expending energy yeah. so that they could be focused. For some, it's about building their energy so they can bring it to the stage. So we are very thoughtfully engineering, if you will, our rehearsal process so that people are prepared to be at their very best. We begin by embracing whatever it is that someone has. Mm-hmm. So when they come into a music therapy session, we're paying attention to the way that person is vocalizing, the way that they're moving, and we begin right there. And we improvise music that says, we hear you and we value you for what you have to offer. And we build context for that, and we build musical context for that. And that sort of begins the opportunity for someone to understand that they can express themselves through what they have to offer, then we can encourage them to keep going and keep singing or keep playing or whatever it happens to be. Many of the folks that we care for don't have traditional ways for expressing themselves right. or traditional ways for communication. And music and dance and drama and all of these programs that we have really provide them with those opportunities. What I love about our productions at the center, they've become a representation of our entire community. Mm-hmm. So we do have folks that help behind the scenes. They help paint our sets. They help build our costumes and make our props. And so there's the opportunity for just about everyone to be involved. And we have an amazing recreation specialist on our team. Erin Atkins is her name. She comes up with the design elements, and she is so committed to making sure that so many people can be involved. Whatever it takes right. for somebody to be successful, right. we're going to figure it out.
Well, you mentioned some of the songs. Let's hear some of that. This is Paul, one of the residents, who is singing Mr. Mistopheles' song.
To the tip of his tail, he can creep through the tiniest crack, he can walk on the narrowest rail, he can pick any card from a pack, he's equally cunning with dice, he's always deceiving you into believing that he's only hunting for mice. He can play any trick with a cork or a spoon and a bit of his paste. You look for a knife or a fork and you think it is merely misplaced. You have seen it one moment, and then it is gone. You find it next week lying out on the lawn. We all say, oh, well, I never was there ever. A cat so clever is magical, Mr. Mistopheles. Oh, well, I never was there ever. A cat so clever is magical, Mr. Mistopheles. Thank you. soul lover is magical minister Mustafa.
That was Mr. Mistopheles, sung by one of the residents, Paul. Can you tell us about the process of getting Paul to sing that song?
Oh, my goodness. It's a tough song. Yeah, it is a tough song. And Paul is actually one of our day students. So we taught the chorus, actually, of Mr. Mistopheles at the audition. And he stepped on stage and sang it with such gusto. And we just knew he had to be in the show. We were prepared for him to sing that chorus and to incorporate that into the show. And our music director, Amanda Bel Castro, she said, I wonder if he could learn a little bit of the verse. And so we started to teach Paul the verse and he sang it back perfectly. And then we taught him a little more.
Nice.
And we taught him a little more and we taught him a little more. And suddenly he was singing the whole song.
Wow.
And such passion as a performer, and just found his home on our stage, I would say. And he just shined. He stole the show.
That's great. That's great. Well, let's listen to another song from the show. This is AJ. He's performing the song McCavity.
McCavity.
McCavity. Yep. Okay.
Yep.
McCavity, there's no one like McCavity. It's broken, every human law, it brings a law of gravity. It's poison, levitation, will make a bigger stare. But when Barista sees so quite, McCavity's not there. There's no one like McCavity. It's broken. Every human law embrace a law of gravity. It's poison, levitation. We'll make a bigger snare. But when Barista sees so bright, McCavity's not there.
And that was AJ bringing his own unique energy and mystery to the role of McCavity, the elusive mystery cat. So what's for the future? Tell us a little bit more about what's happening in the fall.
So we are very excited. The center this fall is going to be launching our Performing Arts Academy.
Yeah.
And this is going to be a school program where we are currently developing an arts-based curriculum. So the pillars of the school will be music, theater, dance movement, and art, visual art. And so the students all day long will be engaged in arts-based learning experiences that really will be used to help build their academic skills and their vocational skills, but I think more importantly, developing their social emotional
yeah.
skills and really coming into their own. So we are so, so excited. And our main stage productions will really remain the cornerstone of this school. We'll actually be studying the shows in greater detail. I was thinking, like, if the academy was open when we did Cats, we could have studied the poetry of T.S. Eliot, who inspired the lyrics.
Great
So all of our lessons and all the work we'll be doing will be centered around the production when it's time to do that.
I really love what they do there.
Thank you.
So I want to thank you, Canio, for coming on the show today and being part of Curtain Call.
Thank you very much.
And that's Tom Candela with Curtain Call, the podcast, talking about theater. The full episode can be heard at wjffradio.org, and you can hear previous episodes there as well. That's all for this edition of Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Have a good weekend, and we'll see you on Monday. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale, dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Jason Tuga, host of The Mixtape. I play classics you love, deep cuts, and brand new music. Friday nights at 7, only on Radio Catskill.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. You're listening to Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. Today's forecast, mostly sunny with a high of 81. Clear tonight, low 64, and for the weekend, sunny and humid tomorrow, high of 80. Looks like some humidity and a high of 84 Sunday, and afternoon thunderstorm possible.